Welcome to the program.
The program. So we got a listener/friend follow-up email after we did the ayahuasca/magic mushrooms episode.
Oh, I love that. Love little mushroom ayahuasca info.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And I'm not going to put him on blast who he is, but thank you so much for sending this. he sent me a link to a Reddit article called "Last Night I Had an Incredible Psilocybin Experience." So basically,
Psilocybin on Reddit. You know it's reputable. Okay, bring it. Mm-hmm.
So basically, this is there's a guy who like did trial runs on himself, and I can't tell if my friend wrote this article or not. If you did,
great
work. If not, great find. But basically, they're talking about combining ayahuasca and magic mushrooms to kind of create like a more, for some people, like manageable high. It's less visual. And the methodology is amazing. Like the way that they describe it is that you should think of the ayahuasca as the car and think of the mushrooms as the fuel. So you take the ayahuasca first as a tea and like,
okay,
let yourself kind of like lift up. And then after, let's see, I think it's like 45 minutes. Yeah. 45 minutes later, you start to take the mushrooms just in really, really small doses. And it like,
okay, so you're like, you start ayahuasca like a regular dose and then you start microdosing on mushrooms?
Yeah, basically. And depending on what like your mushroom tolerance is, but basically this guy is saying like, be careful with the mushrooms once you've already taken ayahuasca, unless you want shit to get really out of hand.
I mean, this is advice we can truly all enjoy, even if you're just like enjoying like a marijuana edible or something. Like,
start slow
before you enjoy the third one.
You can always take more.
You always can.
Yeah.
But same with adding salt to food anyway.
Hey, I mean, sometimes I've learned that I shouldn't salt before I taste, but it was a hard habit to break.
You should not salt before you taste.
I know. And it's rude. So stop doing it.
Oh my God, that's funny.
But the most startling thing to me, and maybe this is like old news, maybe everyone already knows this, but
okay,
ayahuasca, which is a Kapi or Kapi vine, is unregulated in the U.S. and can be purchased on Etsy.
Wait, what?
Yeah. And you can also use a different substance that's a little cheaper called rue seeds. It's just a different dosage. But you can also purchase those on Etsy.
Etsy is like, first of all, the Wild West.
Clearly.
Clearly. Second of all, this is disturbing info because it means we're like one step closer to you trying to make me do ayahuasca with you.
I'm just saying, like, it just, in my mind, became much more accessible.
I don't know why I would buy ayahuasca and trust it from like some Etsy seller, though. Like, that also seems
reckless.
Read the reviews.
Just gotta read the reviews.
Didn't you hear about the fake review scandals that have happened all over the place? Looking at you, Sunday Riley.
I'm just saying, I could get us some Etsy ayahuasca and we could do a shamanless journey together. We could just be two people with machetes going through the wilderness on this ayahuasca experience with no guide.
That honestly is one of the more disturbing things you've proposed to me.
But as far as the shitting and vomiting,
a lot of weird things to my life, and many of them I've done.
That's true.
Yeah, you once said apparently on this podcast that I do everything you say,
and that's clearly a lie.
You said that was when it's fully a lie, but was the first time I denied you ayahuasca.
Oh, that's right. And I was scandalized.
I know, like, you couldn't.
It's not the relationship dynamic I'm used to here. Yeah.
Apparently, I feel like I'm an enabling parent. I'm like the kid who, like, always gets the candy is you.
I mean, the Dawn in the Skillet incident is, like, the number one thing that comes to mind.
Ask us about the time we lit soap on fire in elementary school. Also, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome.
And then I get like a little misty and I'm like, should I be caring more about animals than like people?
But it doesn't have to. He licks all the beakers and flasks and tubes until he finds it.
No. Are you making this up?
I'm not. This is how it was discovered. Hands-on in the field experience to hydrate youths.
Which I know you're like, great, Austin. So you're drinking that fake water again. This month in December, please stop douching your genitals.
Soul searching to find their true self.
I mean, that is this podcast, so it's something we can all enjoy together. Welcome! Why Are You Like This is the weekly podcast released on Tuesdays, and every week Jamie comes at me and attempts to get me to do ayahuasca. And in the meantime, we dissect pop culture, pseudoscience, real science, just really whatever we're noodling on at any given time in order to determine why people are the way that they are. That is Jamie Ryan in Cincinnati.
And that is Austin Williams in Chicago.
Denying ayahuasca.
As again. Always.
Denying always ayahuasca. An ayahuasca denier.
I'm just saying, if we had the freedom to do it in our own home without like the company of strangers, I would probably have a better journey because sure. I wouldn't be so worried about like the public diarrhea. That's all I'm saying.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's an honest.
The public diarrhea is a big deterrent.
Yeah, for sure.
Perhaps the largest.
Would you be really upset if like one day, like months or even years from now, I was like, oh yeah, I did ayahuasca and I did it with someone else? Like, how mad would you be?
I would see that as just a betrayal. On par with the Garden of Eden.
Oh my God. The Garden of Eden, original sin. Wow. Getting shamed over here.
Yeah, unless I could forgive you I don't know. I could think of a handful of circumstances, but just not off the top of my head right now.
Oh wow. Okay. Noted.
There are a few things that I feel that strongly about.
Wow. Okay. Make a list of them. I want to know what the others are.
I will.
Like into original sin. Oh, I can't.
Whatever.
Well, listen, speaking of things that you'd like us to mutually love together, I don't know. I don't have a segue for this or a
speaking of
transition.
Putting lighting Dawn on fire, maybe.
Speaking of the time we lit soap on fire as youths, I'd like to talk about our shared passion for The Simpsons.
Yes, thank you. I love.
Why not? Your house, I don't actually know if you know this, but like your house was the first place I ever watched The Simpsons.
It was for a lot of youths.
I feel like your parents were more into letting you watch The Simpsons than perhaps the parents of me and the other neighbor children at
that age. I might
even
say that it was encouraged.
I kind of feel like it was.
Well, I feel like it was programming that I really enjoyed, that like my parents also liked. And so when you have like a kid under 10, that little Venn diagram sliver is pretty small.
That's true. That's very true. Well, and I would say the monorail episode is arguably
most favorite.
One of the best.
Oh,
and
my God.
Easily an episode that I think I could speak for both of us when I say we've watched it legitimately the most.
Yeah. It's number
fucking
one.
Great.
Listen, most quotable.
Mono means one, and rail means rail, and that concludes our intensive 3-week course. Oh my God. Listen, amongst all of the great things that happened on The Simpsons, including the seasons in which Conan was writing for them, bless him.
A golden period.
I mean, so it was the highlight, but I feel like one of like the beloved things of The Simpsons are the running gags.
Oh, and yeah.
I mean, the obvious ones are the things that you catch in the intro. So, like, the couch gag, whatever Bart's writing lines of on the chalkboard, right? Lisa's saxophone, the song changes. Mm-hmm. And a classic running gag midst the show, though, are Bart making prank calls to Mo.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Calls the bar, he calls Moe's, and he prank calls. And it's from season one on. And some of them, like, the jokes are dated now when you watch, and some of them reign true. And this, I probably also think, was something that was, like, especially funny at, like, the 9-10-year-old age.
100%. And that's it. This is one of the elements that made The Simpsons, I think, kind of a cross-generational show. Because there are truly jokes for all different brows of humor sprinkled throughout.
Real. And to that point, I just thought for, like, a quick moment, we could enjoy some of the prank calls.
Let us enjoy.
Let us enjoy.
Yes, I'm looking for a friend of mine.
Last name Jazz, first name Hugh.
Hold on, I'll check. Hugh Jazz! Oh, somebody check the men's room for a Hugh Jazz!
I'm Hugh Jazz.
Telephone.
Hello, this is Hugh Jazz.
Hi.
Who's this?
Bart Simpson.
What can I do for you, Bart?
Look, I'll level with you, mister. This is a crank call that sort of backfired, and I'd like to bail out right now.
All right. Better luck next time.
A little pre-dinner entertainment.
Mouse Tavern.
Is Oliver there?
Who?
Oliver, close off.
Hold on, I'll check. Oliver, close off. Call for Oliver, close off.
Mouse Tavern.
Is Mr. Freely there?
Who?
Freely. First initial is IP.
Hold on, I'll check. Is IP Freely here? Hey, everybody, IP Freely.
Wait a minute. Listen to me, you lousy bum. When I get home to you, you're dead. I swear I'm gonna slice your heart in half.
Now here's the thing you may be asking yourself. Is Austin leading us through everything great about The Simpsons to do like a Simpsons fan appreciation episode? And the answer is no. But I love pranks and I love prank calls. And we love prank calls.
We sure do.
Perhaps even more, I would say, we love as a yesteryear practice, we love a prank recorded answering machine message, should we say.
I will say.
Okay, so when Jamie and I, when we were probably, I feel like fifth grade was like really the peak of it. It was like all
five,
landlines
grades
all
five
the time.
To seven, yeah.
Yeah, I think that checks out. And we would, before we would go to my house, before like my parents were home from work. And
but we were
all
home for school, from school.
But we were home from school, right? And we would do like the voice memo function on my parents' answering machine where you could record messages. And we would like, I mean, we would record a shit ton. And my mom would come home and we'd be like in the, you know, hanging out like family room-ish. And we'd be like, you should check like the answering machine, Wendy. Like, you should check it. And then my mom would see there'd be like 37 messages. Yeah. And we'd make her listen to them.
God damn it, to listen to this many right now.
Right. And we would just like lay on the floor at her feet, like crying, laughing at ourselves.
Yep. I had never paid attention to her reaction, actually.
Sometimes I did. I feel like we really felt like we scored when like she thought it was funny. But like mostly we were making each other laugh.
Right. We were.
I don't know. I want to hear like some of your memories of these, but like specific ones that ring true were us impersonating a very like specific substitute teacher repeatedly calling from jail. And then
calling
we had like
from the
an
jail
assortment
cell
of characters that we had just like made up. And the only place these characters existed would be when we left them on my parents' answering machine.
Mm-hmm. One time I called as Verizon Wireless.
Don't remember that.
I mostly remember us, I think in sixth grade, calling your mom or like leaving answering machine messages as our fifth grade teacher.
Oh, I do remember doing that. And it was sparked because our fifth grade teacher
left a real voicemail.
She left a, like she herself left a real voicemail, not quite a voicemail at the time, an answering machine message.
Yeah.
Yesterday. Sorry. Kids. But it was a voicemail, whatever. For my mom, that was weird. And so then for like a year, we just impersonated her.
Yeah. She opened that message with, "This is a voice from the past," and then said her own name.
Yeah, and we were like, wait, what? And my mom thought it was so funny that we all used to, like, replay it. Like, my mom also was like, who the fuck is this? And, like, we were like, what is going on? Ugh, it was, I mean, truly a joyous, joyous time. And I think probably, perhaps, like, the beginning of, like, our realist bond over, like, how we thought all the same shit was funny.
Oh, it was our introduction to improv comedy also.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
A torch we have not carried into adulthood, but running bits were real fun. A cast of characters in our heads. It was like a whole little world, and they just would keep calling your mom and keep calling.
She was just like, guys, what the actual fuck?
I know.
I don't know. So to that point, do you have any like thoughts on what makes a good prank call or anything like that?
I think that believability at the beginning makes it so much better. If you can get the person who you're talking to or who you're leaving a message for to, like, for 10 seconds or longer if possible, like, really think that you are not making a prank, that this is a serious call.
Oh, wow. Okay. I like that. I think you got to, like, the bait and switch, if you
Yeah, because you get them to talk to you. And we see that in the Simpsons clip, too. Like, Mo thinks that it's a regular call at first and then shouts the name, unfortunately, and then, like, realizes he's being pranked. So there has to be... Someone has to fall for it, I feel like, in order for it to be, like, a quote, good prank.
Sure. Yeah, I feel that. Well, and it's interesting and also kind of this funny, dated thing. When I was doing kind of the digging of just, like, a light history of prank calls, because I was like, where did they start? Mm-hmm. And obviously you can't start a prank call before the phone, so it's not, like,
prank letters?
That old of a practice. I'm sure, but that's not a prank call. That's a thing entirely, and I'm sure.
And yeah, you don't see anyone open the letter, yeah.
Yeah, the gratification might not be so readily available.
So delayed.
Right. Yeah, I don't know how you'd handle that. But... some early examples that were shouted out happened in even like the 30s. And I was like, okay, that's like pretty early. But then I was reminded truly like prank calls kind of, I won't say like completely died, but really like the caller ID of the 90s really spoiled kind of the fun of that.
I remember that being a problem in middle school sometimes. Like I remember specifically a night attempting to call my friend's house and prank him. This is our mutual friend.
Sure.
But I was foiled because his dad just called my house back and was like, hey, someone keeps calling from this number. Will you fucking stop? And then I got in trouble.
Oh my God.
And so, yeah, you really do get foiled by caller ID. Then there's a whole like star 67 or something. What can you can make it invisible. I don't remember.
Oh, yeah, there used to be some sort of, like, weird phone trick, and now people can just, like, spoof numbers or, you know, hide
their
number as unknown.
Yeah, you do a Google thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that's not hard, but I feel like people, we screen our calls in different ways.
I do not answer, yeah.
I don't answer numbers I don't have saved in my phone. Are you kidding? Come on.
No.
But, yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed just, like, the prank call is, like, a sweet prank, but also, like, what about, like, just, like, pranks in general? And I got gears turning on it. And I like a little psychology, of course, right? About what people think makes a good prank and kind of the psychology behind pranks. And I'm going to spin some positives and I have to, you know, represent both sides. I'm generally a fan of the prank and I will talk more about it.
Yes. No. And I have many anecdotes locked and loaded.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Good, because why not? And I'm here for like a little bit of just like prank memory lane for fun. So why not?
Excellent.
So I was reading an article that appeared in the New York Times called April Fool, The Purpose of Pranks. Mm. And a little bit older, but nothing in it didn't ring true to me. I think it was like from 08 or something.
Yeah.
And basically at the beginning of it, they're kind of talking about, all right, like pranks, like in pranks, like pranking in general, I guess. How do you do it? They're like, well, you should, for it to be a prank, it's something that, you know, stops short of like total humiliation. Mm-hmm. So this isn't that terrible scene in Carrie.
Some boundaries.
Right. And if possible, you mix in some irony, maybe some drama, maybe a bogus call from perhaps someone of significance, you know, an old flame, someone's new boss.
A previous foreign exchange student you knew.
Yeah, why not? And a good prank often involves a little bit of stagecraft. But, and I liked that they said that, It also requires emotional intuition.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a really short con.
Yeah, you want to play to a specific person or people's weakness or dislikes, but like also not go too hard.
100%. Yeah.
And interestingly enough, but I'm never surprised because psychologists seem to never let us down, they have studied pranks for years. Often, though, in the context of, like, harassment, bullying, and kind of the manner of, like, malicious and exclusion and prejudice and
not so things. Lighthearted.
Right. But practical jokes are, like, a far more common effort. And oftentimes, a practical joke, if you will, is to, like, bring a person into a group.
Yes, it is. Yes.
And anthropologists have found that an integral part of rituals around the world intended to kind of temper success with humility, kind of through pranking.
Mm-hmm. Hazing?
Well, I think hazing we might spell out in a different way, and it kind of
depends.
I think
that crosses a line, probably.
Exactly. And it is where, like, do you stop short of total humiliation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there is definitely research that suggests that the experience of being duped can stir some self-reflection in a few ways, and other experiences can kind of humble us to check our arrogance, but also maybe being oblivious, like if you have a really gullible moment in a prank.
Mm-hmm.
And I do find it humbling when you're in a prank situation and, like, you can take it. And I also think it can really, like, lighten the mood.
100%. I mean, unless someone really gets upset, then, like, the whole day could be ruined.
Oh, that's fair. I thought this was interesting, though, some of the things that some anthropologists and folks mentioned in this article.
Mm-hmm.
So in the 60s, there's an activist and prankster known as Abby Hoffman, who reportedly divided practical jokes into three categories. Oh. This I thought was interesting and kind of will answer, I think, maybe the question you brought up about hazing.
Oh, okay.
So the bad ones, right, in terms of practical jokes, involve vindictive skewering or the sort of head shaving, shivering in your boxers fraternity hazing that sociologist Irving Goffman describes as degradation ceremonies. And I'm like, that's a good way to put it.
Excellent, like, terminology.
Right. I'm like, yeah, though that's not cute. Neutral tricks, they would say, are more akin to physical punchlines. So, like, wrapping the toilet bowl in saran wrap you know, putting, like, a giant pumpkin on top of, like, the school building. Or
maybe when we would freeze all my grandma's bras and underwear on Saturday night so we didn't have to go to church on Sunday morning.
We did do that as children. That was awesome. Yeah, we did. We did. We would take
ran them underwater.
Grandma's underwear, run them underwater.
All of them, though.
Freezer.
So there were none.
Literally every pair. We had a lot of fun. We did a lot of crazy things to your grandma.
Yeah.
She just was always like, you girls, oh guys.
I know. We put a bunch of dye in her shampoo.
Oh yeah. I forgot about that. I really regret nothing, and she was a very good sport. And
she's
I hope
the
someday
best sport ever.
Should I be pranked by young children, I respond as delightfully
I'll
as
try
your
to remember
did.
About that.
We also one time, we took wood clamps, like, that you would use if you were, like, gluing a piece or something, from your grandpa's shop, and we clamped the sheets to the bed frame around her while she was sleeping. If anyone had an insight into, like, our childhood friendship and she couldn't get out of bed the next morning.
But we did that the same day that we put dye on the soap and in the shampoo so that she, like, would get hit repeatedly when she woke up and then her bras
we
were
really
frozen.
Yeah, it would just, like, it would snowball. Like, there were so many things. And there, I remember, like, there was a time I feel like that was involved in some of the same hijinks. It might have been when we froze the bras. That I remember, like, writing in barbecue sauce or ketchup or something, like, dye Sue on, like, on several knives and, like, putting them in weird places in the kitchen, like, in the pantry where they didn't belong. Yeah. That was, I'm not.
Oh, my God, I forgot about that.
We had a lot of fun with your grandma. Ooh.
Yeah. Mm. She's a very good sport. But okay, back to the
she's
list.
She's a super good sport. So that's kind of some of the neutral stuff, right?
Yeah.
What Hoffman called the good prank, he said it was something that humorously satirizes human fears or failings and is found in a wide variety of initiation rites and coming-of-age rituals. Mm-hmm. So here's some anthropology stuff that I thought was kind of interesting and also, like, kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
there's a certain group of people in New Guinea, for example, when this was written, mm-hmm. that have children make a small box and bury it in the ground. And they tell them that after a while, treasure will appear inside, but they're not allowed to look at it, according to Edie Turner, a professor of anthropology at UVA.
Okay.
So, as you would expect, kids are, like, not patient people, and so ultimately they're going to succumb to the curiosity, and when they open, if they, like, go and, like, dig up the box, and it's just full of, like, human feces.
Oh, my God. Always? No matter how long they wait?
I mean, that's what they do when they bury the box. I guess the adult folks who are doing this, I don't
know. The adult who's orchestrating this activity takes a shit in that box.
Apparently, according to this New York Times article. This one's like a little less ridiculous, but I thought it was also sanitation issue.
Oh my God, go ahead.
Okay. So there also is a group of folks in Zambia that have an adult basically like in a big mask in a, like a scary way that they will like sneak and scare the shit out of the boys that are camping outside of the village. And the camping outside of the village is a part of this coming of age ritual they do where they're showing bravery, which is why they like camp outside of the village. But then they'll like intentionally kind of have somebody scare the crap out of them, which to me feels like so many things that happen in my childhood where somebody's dad like scared the shit out of the sleepover
or my dad constantly
And there is something fun to that. It's kind of this like coming of age thing where you're like getting like a little bit of independence and you're like staying up late, but then someone will like humble you by like freaking you the fuck out. I think that's
welcome
fun.
To adulthood, which is scary,
right? Truly.
Be prepared.
And so Dr. Turner, our homie from UVA over here, they go on to say that these kinds of tricks are super common and, like, clearly illustrated in our own examples, and that they're really a way to put a person down before raising them up.
Aww.
You're being, like, kind of reminded of your failings even as you're being honored, which I thought was, like, a really cool way to think about it, and I liked it.
Yeah, so that's why, like, a roast works.
Yes, like the Comedy Central roast and that kind of thing, which are oftentimes one of my when I can't sleep watches. I'll watch the highlights of like anytime Nikki Glaser has roasted anyone, and I will watch everyone roast Justin Bieber because he takes it like a champ and it's really funny.
Good for him.
That's the thing that I also, Bruce Willis's is good. I could go on, but I digress. I will say that one of the things I like about watching a good roast that makes it fun are the people who are, like, down for it, who are down to be roasted.
It's totally ruined if the person who's being roasted is not down. Like, that totally kills the vibe. It makes it super uncomfortable, and you shouldn't have agreed to it in the first place.
100%. And we've got another little cultural sociologist from Smith College weighing in, Jonathan Wynn, says that pranks served to maintain social boundaries in groups as various as like police departments and sororities, but you also gain status by being picked on in some ways, and it can kind of be like a form of flattery because you're being brought in.
And you get attention from the group. Like, if it's not like horrible, like if you join a sorority and it's not like horrible hazing, but like someone plays a prank on you, if you're like new.
Yeah, it's not, we're trying to give you alcohol poisoning. We're not condoning.
Right.
That.
It's not that. It's not that. It's something much gentler. But you as the new person get some attention on you, which like could lead to making more friends because people notice that you're there. And so, yes, it is like bringing someone in. I totally see that.
100%. And I always liked pranks in high school because when I was involved or someone did it to me, it would always be like us doing it to like our friends or people we had crushes on or like somebody's boyfriend.
You do it to people who you like.
Exactly. And it
you
meant
always
that you
do
liked
it to people
them.
You like. Exactly.
And oftentimes we were usually, I feel like late high school, we were fucking with people's cars. So it was like wrapping things in cellophane or like
covering them with pads,
putting, like,
as I did once.
The
biggest
on the
maxi
windshield.
Pads I could find.
Post-its. Yeah. Yeah, all of that kind of stuff. And it was super commonplace with, like, high school homies, I feel like, in my heyday. And just, honestly, like, a real treat. And you, even if it was you that, like, the thing happened to, you felt special.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, when people fork your yard or whatever, it is special.
Sure. And they reference in this New York Times article a paper that was published where three psychologist argued that the sensation of being duped, mm-hmm. so the anger, self-blame, bitterness, was such a singular cocktail that it forced an uncomfortable kind of self-awareness of, like, how much of a dupe am I and where are my blind spots? So in this kind of non-initiation way, here's the one where you go, like, am I gullible AF?
Yeah.
Because as humans, we kind of develop this notion of fairness as part of our self-concept. Mm-hmm. And it's also extremely important in any kind of relationship exchange. Mm-hmm. And with that, we had a kind of an interesting study thrown at us. So Kathleen DeVos, welcome to the program.
Thank you. She is a lady doing a study.
Love a lady doing a study. She's a consumer psychologist at the Carson School of Management at the University of Minnesota. And Dr. Voss and her co-authors, Roy F. Baumeister of Florida State and Jason Chin of the University of British Columbia, all the audio, all the schools, you're welcome, proposed that the fear of being had, quote unquote, mm-hmm. is a trait that varies from near obliviousness in some people to hypervigilance in others.
Oh, yeah, there are people. I was in line like next to someone at an amusement park once. It was kind of maybe like a 35 to 40 year old woman, and she just was repeatedly going on, and I don't know what happened or like who pranked her, but she was like, I ain't never got got before. She was upset about it. Yeah,
like she couldn't believe it.
Couldn't believe, was a little angry. I think that she felt that it kind of ruined maybe her credibility.
She's questioning maybe her own like obliviousness.
Yes, here. She sees herself as a savvy person.
Yeah, right? Well, the researchers in this scenario had 55 men and women play a computerized cooperation game and demonstrated that participants who felt they had been burned would go over the experience in their heads, playing out alternative versions of how they might have behaved. Mm. So, not so much a prank way, but the psychology of, you know, being duped, like having this thing because you believe things are going to be equitable and you feel like you got burned, mm-hmm. it holds up this mirror.
Oh, yeah.
It may, in fact, show you where you are on kind of the scale of like too trusting or too vigilant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because paranoia also has its cost because it can sour relationships. For sure.
Yep. I mean, paranoia does just a myriad of dark work in your life, so.
Yeah, truly. So if you're running back the tape mentally, in this case, meditating on, like, how embarrassing the event might have turned out, or, you know, if there's some sort of, like, well, you should have known better, or like this woman being like, I can't believe I got God.
Mm-hmm.
It's this kind of thing that serves to highlight our shortcomings.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a good deal of research that has shown that kind of these counterfactual insights can kickstart new behaviors, new self-exploration, and ultimately self-improvement, which I, again, would say a great moment to advocate for pranks.
So we should really be pranking people who are kind of like maybe inflexible and can't see others' opinions.
I mean, perhaps.
Personal growth, just a little nudge.
Yeah, you don't know how they're going to take it.
You don't. Be careful.
But ultimately, kind of the way they wrap up this New York Times article is that a good prank in the end is a simulation of a crisis, but not the real thing, a la watching, like, Punk'd or, mm-hmm. like, Candid Camera.
Candid Camera.
And it serves as a valuable reminder that not every precious box contains precisely exactly the treasure you might expect, because it might contain literal human shit.
It could be that an adult took a shit in that box before they buried it and told you that it was treasure.
Literature says there could have been an adult who shit in your box. You know?
I do.
Oh. But I thought it was interesting because some of the other stuff I delved into here was kind of the talk of like power of suggestion and these other things that can kind of play into pranks and honestly are reminiscent of like hypnosis, right?
Oh. Well, because yeah, I mean, it's a little con, like I said.
There's a lot of psychology at play with pranks.
Mm-hmm. Of course there is.
So, in 1976, there was a British astronomer who went on BBC Radio and announced that an alignment of the planets Jupiter, Pluto, and Earth would cause a reduction in the Earth's gravity. Mm-hmm. And as a result, people would momentarily weigh less, and suggested it would be a little like what an astronaut experiences in space. And at the appointed time of the alignment, calls started flooding into this radio station with people claiming that they had momentarily levitated or jumped and hit their head on the ceiling.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Which I love. And the psychological process here is like the power of suggestion. Uh-huh. Again, same kind of principle that underlies hypnosis.
And I have to wonder, in like a chaos magic kind of like manifesting shit way, if any of them did levitate a little because they just believed.
Maybe. I don't know. We can't know.
We could never know, but
$400 on a shift. We can't know. Could have burned your menstrual blood. Who's to
could
say?
Could have.
Mm-hmm. Could have. So in 1965, another little example of this, the BBC, because God, the BBC and the British are better than us. They're doing it live. Okay. They aired a report about a professor who had invented quote unquote smell-o-vision. And it was a device that would project smells through your TV into your home. And to demonstrate, the professor like chopped onions and brewed coffee on air. Mm-hmm. And viewers called into the station to let them know that they were indeed smelling the aromas as
if they
were in the studio.
Oh my God. My eyes are watering.
I mean, crazy.
Yeah.
And I thought there were other ones that were, I came across that were funny, where they had like told people like you could turn black and white TV like color if you like put like pantyhose or something over the television.
Oh my God.
Fractured the light. And TVs were smaller when this was going on.
I briefly believe that just now.
I think it happened in Sweden or something. Mm. And these people were like, everybody's cutting off their stockings and like putting it over the TV. It's just like somebody told you that that would work.
And why do you want it to be black and white?
No.
It makes it color? Yeah.
Did I say it backwards? Black and white TV making it color.
I'm not sure. I probably heard it backwards. Sorry about that.
Hi, who's to say? You listener probably know. We do not.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was super funny. And just like those kind of things of like, somebody's like, oh, did you know if you do this, this happens? And then we end up trying dumb shit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been in that situation?
That's a bad example. Sorry.
I feel like people have gotten me to eat gross things because of this. Like, people have been like, oh, if you, like, do this or whatever, like, this is really good. Or, oh, you should try this. And it's, like, something foul.
Yeah, I definitely had that experience with Goldschlager, which I did not enjoy. But I've definitely, like, done this to other people and, like, created social pressure for other people to do things. So this wasn't something that happened to me, but rather like a little prank that I orchestrated for someone else.
Okay.
But there was a birthday party of mine that you attended in middle school, and
sure, I think I was at all of those.
yes. And we had a friend who was just like, I don't know, we were middle school, we were probably being mean, but we just like wanted to do a social experiment and see if we could make up slang words that were like we had never heard before, and see if by the end of the night, if we said them enough, if we could get our friend to like start using those like new slang terms we had made up.
Oh my God, I remember this.
And so we chose the words MIP, which was like a positive slang, like for something that you like, and then a POFF. POFF was like a negative slang. And I don't know why we went for two, like could have just really shot for one slang term. But
yeah, it does seem a little
it's lofty,
aggressive. Yeah, why not? Okay.
But by the time we were going to bed, she used the terms, and I just felt like such an enormous sense of success. But I don't know if she ever realized that those were not real terms. Maybe she just thought they were like really brief slang terms that people didn't continue to use.
Maybe she still says them. You don't know.
I hope she still says them. I hope that she kept saying them and then other people started saying them. That would be the best case scenario. But
if we like somehow ran into her and like other people and they were using those words.
Yes, incredible. I would love that.
Yeah. I mean, and there is always kind of, I think that's the move in terms of you think about who's like your most oblivious friend.
Mm.
Like you could, there's always that person who you feel like is like a little bit more susceptible than the rest of you to believe shit. Mm-hmm. And that person does become kind of the pranked person.
Oh,
and in my immediate family, that's definitely my mother.
Yeah. Aww.
And I think, but it's also like, it's not like a picking on like shitty thing. It's like, it's kind of this like affectionate, funny mm-hmm. thing.
Well, yeah.
And sometimes like, it starts and she's like, guys, stop. I know what you're doing. And it's funny.
It is funny. My grandma was definitely always that person for me and also sometimes for you. And it is
clearly
like you said about your mom, it's 100% coming from a place of endearment. And I almost feel like I selected my grandma as the target of pranks because I knew that she would be a good sport about it. Like, I wouldn't do that to other family members who I thought would explode. Like, why would I do that?
No, and I think that's the thing is, like, I think sometimes when you prank someone, the goal can often be to, like, ultimately share a laugh with them.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. We may have gone overboard with the bras, but she was cool.
I don't know. That was pretty funny.
It was really funny, and she was cool about it.
She was cool about all of it. Listen, you want to hear a wild one? Mm-hmm. So, on April 1st, 1974, in Alaska, a local practical joker and helicopter pilot, why not? He lives in Alaska, flew hundreds of old tires to the crater of a nearby dormant volcano and set them on fire.
Oh my God.
The resulting smoke caused residents to believe that the volcano was erupting.
That is too far. That is too far. It's also like an environmental hazard.
I mean, this was the 70s. I don't know how worried they were about burning rubber. Okay. But
well, if it was the 70s, that's a pretty good prank.
I love how you're like fine with it because it's the 70s now.
You know, the rules, women's rights, everything. It was looser then. We use a different measuring stick for terrible.
I mean, perhaps. But then it's kind of like the prank, kind of like the Orson Welles, like radio broadcast with the Martian invasion.
Oh, shit. That's another one that's pretty, like, I don't know. That's ballsy as fuck.
Right. And it plays both of these things, the dormant volcano and the Martian invasion radio broadcast, play to these long-held fears.
Mm-hmm.
Like, fears that are effective in pranking other people because
they already believed it.
Yeah, you already were like a little bit worried about this, and it's that most like primitive emotional reaction.
And the paranoia has been doing dark work in your mind.
I mean, always. Yes. That paranoia doing that dark work.
That dark work.
Dark work. Well, I have to, speaking of dark work, give like the negative side as two people who I think are clearly like pretty into some pranking, right?
Mm-hmm.
I came across, and who would have thought this would have been the anti-pranking source, but I came across an article on Vice.
What?
You're welcome. That was written in 2016.
Mm.
And it was entitled, What are love of sadistic pranks tell us about ourselves? I'm like, okay.
Well, we don't all love sadistic pranks. It's fine. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things that happened in here is, like, scientists, like, they know where fear comes. It's triggered by the feeling of losing control or being rendered powerless in some way.
Mm-hmm.
We've all experienced it. Sometimes we volunteer for it. We watch horror films. We dress up for Halloween. We go to theme parks. We submit ourselves to terrifying rides.
We did a whole episode about fear and also about haunted houses for this reason.
That's true. And we find pleasure in making other people jump.
Yeah.
There's an element of eroticism in recalling a particularly grisly story. But why is it a cultural obsession?
Hmm.
There's a value in being able to shock, says Tony Blockley, a criminologist at the University of Derby.
Hmm.
And the desire to frighten someone, he says, is a product of a society obsessed with sensationalism. Shock has become currency. A way to impress. By attaining that shock value, you feed your personal ego.
Mm-hmm. Seems right.
There's a status, a credibility,
there's and a power kudos
attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't shock or scare for the sake of shocking or scaring. We do it to achieve something.
Mm. Got
motives. And in frightening someone, Blockley says, to your point, you're asserting your power and control over them.
Mm-hmm. You're making their reality.
Right. And the intense psychological drive to be dominant is predicted by an environment that antagonizes these values because they can.
Mm-hmm.
They can scare somebody. They can control somebody. And
maybe
the folks that are doing
this
don't see the people that they frighten as victims. They maybe don't consider that person.
Mm.
They don't try to.
They're
and they see that person
object
as an
in the prank.
Object Yes. An object for their achievement, not a person.
So perhaps really aggressive pranksters may have some light sociopathic traits.
I mean, truly. And that was the first kind of some ego shittiness that I came across with it. And I was mm-hmm. I really should hear some more negativity on this. So I found an article on our second favorite resource, Psychology Today, called Pranks and Pretension. And the thing that jumped out at me was this event that I almost feel like is a little sensationalized in the front end of this article.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to read you just the paragraph itself.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to take you to what I found out about it. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
So the beginning of the Psychology Today article begins. There is currently an especially absurd dust-up over whether the originators of the prank call from an Australian radio station are responsible for the subsequent suicide of a hospital nurse who received and transferred the call.
Oh my
God. The show has already been canceled, and the DJs involved, the targets of nearly universal condemnation, including death threats, have tearfully apologized.
Wow.
Scotland Yard is investigating, and there is talk of potential criminal responsibility on the part of the DJs and the radio station.
Oh my God.
And I read that and I was like, chicka what? And I'm going to read you a little bit about the actual event mm-hmm. that they're talking about.
Yeah. It
happened in December of 2012. And it is... we were dealing with folks from an Australian radio station calling a hospital in London.
Mm.
And once I found this in that first Psychology Today article, it's mentioned because it was of like such big, I don't know, like story hullabaloo in the news media coverage.
Yeah.
That if you go to like the Wikipedia page for prank calls, this instance has its own section.
Oh my God. Okay. Big deal.
And I was like, I've never heard of this.
Yeah, I don't ever recall this. I was distracted with like maybe the world's going to end probably if it was December 2012, but do go on.
You thought the world was going to end in 2012?
I didn't really, but it was a fun idea.
Okay, we're just checking in.
Yeah.
Listen, we can't know. Okay, so basically on the 2nd of December, St. James Palace announced that Catherine, Duchess of Cambridge, was pregnant and had been admitted to King Edward's Hospital in London due to basically like severe morning sickness. So this is Princess Kate in mm-hmm. 2012, pregnant with the baby.
Yeah.
And on the 4th of December at about 5:30 a.m. London time or 4:30 p.m. Sydney time, the hosts of Hot 30 Countdown, Mel Greig and Mike Christian, called the hospital and spoke to Saldana, the nurse,
mm-hmm.
impersonating Queen Elizabeth, Lizzie II, our Queen Liz, the mum.
Yeah.
And Greig basically said like, oh, hello there. Can I like speak to Kate, please? My granddaughter. Like, I don't know how he did this. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever. And the nurse responded like, sure, like, hold on, and transferred the call to the Duchess's nurse, mm-hmm. who spent approximately 2 minutes speaking with Greig as well as Christian, the other radio host, who was impersonating the Prince of Wales.
Mm.
And the hosts used basically what they later described as just like ridiculous, like comedy accents.
Okay. Yeah.
They didn't,
like maybe not believable.
So they said after the fact,
okay,
right?
Okay. Yeah.
So I don't know.
Okay. I'm listening. Yes.
But the stunt was broadcast on the 5th of December. So they called on the 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
After it had been cleared by the radio station's lawyers, because that's what people do when they do those like crazy things where it's like people like have radio show hosts like call someone because they like are trying to catch someone cheating.
It's legal shit involved.
Yeah, there's usually lawyers. There's one that they used to do on a Cincinnati station
Ooh.
Back when I lived there where they would, like, the radio station would call, like, whoever's
this feels familiar.
Boo, and they would be like, you want, like, we're a local florist. We like to, like, try and pick up, like, business. And you know, were randomly selected to, like, win free, like, a free dozen roses or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
like one for you, like a dozen for you or something, and like a dozen to send to someone else, who do you want to send them to? And people then try and like, they'd have like their significant other on the line, try and catch them like sending flowers to another person. It's very dramatic. I'm sure there are lawyers involved. Anyway, I digress. So this was cleared on the 5th, and that's when it was broadcast. And when the hospital chief executive, John Lofthouse, learned of the prank call, he condemned it as like an act of journalistic trickery and that no nurse should have to deal with that.
I mean, so that's fair.
Sure. And the CEO of the Southern Cross Austereo, which somehow hospital things, I don't know, later claimed the station officials had made at least 5 attempts to contact the 2 nurses in the recording prior to greenlighting the call for broadcast. With Sydney University law professor Barbara McDonald noting that his comments showed the station already understood that they needed to get consent to air the interview and they failed to. So basically they're saying like, yeah, you know, you have to get permission to like play whatever on the radio, and that they had, you know, tried repeatedly but didn't ultimately get it, and they knew they were supposed to. So that's this whole thing. And then on the 6th, the radio station issued a brief apology for any inconvenience caused by their actions. Although Christian, one of the hosts, continued to promote the royal prank on Twitter. And neither Saldana nor the other nurse was disciplined or suspended by the hospital. Like, nothing bad there.
Yeah.
And St. James Palace also indicated that they did not blame the nurses. So the royals were like, we're not mad at you for, like, whatever happened, that you guys were talking to these people pretending to be us. Right.
Yeah.
So that was on the 6th when the apology came out. And on the morning of the 7th, Saldana was found dead by security and other staff in her nurse's quarters at the hospital.
Oh, no.
And she had taken her life, and it was reported that she left 3 handwritten notes, one of which blamed the radio stunt for her death, another note that discussed funeral arrangements, and the third directed at her employer, criticizing their handling of the events that followed the prank call. So, not, like, I don't know, basically clear to me from things that I looked into how it, like, escalated so quickly, or exactly what happened on the hospital end. And I was like, wow, this is intense. And the way the Psychology Today thing, like, threw it in there, I was like, oh, my God, like, someone killed themselves because of a prank call. But it was never thrown out that, like, they had convinced the nurses to release really like private info or something like it that
right no I wonder what it is, if it's just like extreme embarrassment, or if like something else weird is going on under the surface.
Right, it wasn't clear to me. And then a lot of things happened clearly, like legally, and the Hot 30 countdown was canceled, and people like these guys were like, there was, you know, money, there was lawsuits, there was, you know, people being, like, fully, like, bullied on the internet, and, like, people saying they, like, wanted the guys who did it to die.
People really get wild on the internet about shit.
Like, I mean, the internet about is everything. Just... truly. And I, like, can't even imagine. I was like, wow, this is, like, just, like, really fucking intense.
Maybe people were sending her really shitty stuff, like, right after that came out. I don't know. People get really intense about the royal family. And if she like answered a prank call and like said some things like to someone she shouldn't have, I could see people online really coming for her about that.
Sure. Or like feeling really made fun of or stupid or ignorant, feeling like you were a moron that you thought just some random Australian dude was the queen.
Oh, yeah.
And back to the Psychology Today dude who's talking about this. He goes on to say that as a psychiatrist, he can say that the thread of, you know, casualty between a prank call and suicide is then no one's commenting on the responsibility or likely emotional equilibrium of the nurse who, after all, was the one who made the decision to end her life. So that's true.
Right. Yeah, that is true.
And she was not at first publicly named or apparently sanctioned in any way by the hospital for what can only be described as an unimportant mistake that had zero adverse consequences on patient care or confidentiality, unless you believe that whether or not the Duchess of Cambridge is sleeping or, like, retching is important. And basically they were, I think that's the kind of stuff they were asking. Mm. Like, is Kate throwing up? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. whatever. If anything, I think Kate would be the one who'd feel like, what the F? But.
Well, and then I have to wonder if, like, the royal family publicly says it's okay, but then, like, really comes for that woman, like, on the DL.
Right. And he goes on to say that kind of another ridiculous aspect of the story then is that we were paying attention to the fact that the patient involved was in the hospital for, like, morning sickness. And the royal family appears to exist in part to promote the, you know, notoriety of people with no special accomplishment. I'm like, dude, you lay in on the British family however you see fit. That's mm-hmm. fine. Mm-hmm. But millions of people are interested into, like, the deaths and births and marriages of any celebrity, people get pranked. But ultimately, we are responsible only for the reasonable and the reasonably practical consequences of our behavior. So mm-hmm. how many of us have perpetuated and endured incidents that resulted in our or someone else's humiliation? I mean,
all of us.
And how many of us were led to contemplate either legal action or suicide as a result?
I have not yet.
I have not yet. And I mean, but that's, like, that's a real, I feel like, big, I don't know, something to draw on it. I don't know. It's hard to.
Well, you never know what's going to send somebody over the edge. And so, like, that's a good thing to remember as we're playing pranks. Like,
right.
And it's hard because that one is, like, seemingly lighthearted, but.
But apparently it wasn't.
Apparently not. Yeah. So you really do you just never know. Maybe we should all just do, like, public pranks that kind of hurt no one.
Right. Well, and I think that's the thing that's, like, kind of tough is, like, you feel like there's no real, like, malice here in terms of what this prank actually was. Like, the guys weren't trying to cause anyone,
like, No. They just suffering. Thought it would be funny and it'd be over and that's it.
Right. And I think, like, you think about, like, I feel like the prank, like, of, you know, deep shame and shittiness is, I do just think of the scene in Carrie with the blood, you
yes,
know?
Yes.
And I'm like, I mean, that was
that's
definitely
not
intentionally
prank.
Malicious.
It's just, like, full shaming, full public
yeah.
shaming.
Yeah. Right. And it was interesting because this, you know, gentleman who wrote this article about this, Gordon S. Livingston, MD, you're welcome. He said that after 9/11 tragedies, there was a lot of talk about the death of irony and the world having changed forever and the possibility that people would, like, never laugh again. And he goes, and that seems, like, kind of crazy 11 years later when this article was written, that somehow, you know, we're never going to, like, joke or prank.
Yeah, I mean, because obviously, like, we do, but I never thought about 9/11 as maybe being, like, the marker for people maybe being aware of, like, sensitivities with pranking, because maybe everyone is a little jumpier. I mean, even in art school, like, we talked about that postmodernism gets divided into pre-9/11 and post-9/11 when you're talking about work. So definitely there has been, like, a shift in temperaments and, like, the way that we absorb content or maybe receive pranks.
Yeah, and I thought that was interesting that, you know, would be something that they would call out here, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Wow, I hadn't thought about that.
But he also says, you know, we're always at risk of taking ourselves too seriously.
Always.
And that's why the call was made in the first place, that it was a way to make fun of a ceremonial institution designed primarily to satisfy our need to gossip and pay attention to trivial things. So he's saying, and again, he's throwing shade at the British royals, do what you want.
Yeah.
But that it could become a trigger for someone to end their life is, like, completely tragic and terrible, but also kind of improbable in his words.
Highly, highly improbable.
But I thought this was very interesting because it does kind of present this argument in some ways. Like, I kind of wondered, you know, is he being too cavalier about, like, an instance of suicide mm-hmm. that resulted from a prank? But I also, when I read the details of it, I was like, I don't understand how, like, we got here from there.
Unless and there's a so bunch of stuff there's we other don't stuff going know. On. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Whether and it's just so, going on for her or if there's, like, other information literally in the story that is unable right. to come out. Yeah.
Right. 100%. But I thought it was really interesting and, like, also maybe, like, a good reminder that, like, everyone's fighting a war, and it made me mm-hmm. feel affirmed in my lack of desire to prank strangers.
Yeah, I have no desire to prank strangers at all.
Right. And I think it kind of went to what we talked about at the beginning of that, like, emotional intuition. And I don't think you can really have that for someone you don't, like, know.
No, I don't think that you can. So the only time that I enjoy, like, maybe pranking a stranger is when I am at work at the pizza place.
Go on.
And sometimes we get prank called, like, people call and, like, are bullshitting us, trying to get us to, like, deliver pizzas to their basement because they're, like, friends with the owner. And it's all, like, just nonsense. So whenever that happens, whoever takes the call puts them on hold and then tells me, like, what they said and what line they're on. And I answer and, like, fully play along for, like, a while and just, like, talk them in circles until they get frustrated. And that does require, I think, emotional intuition. I have to get a read on that person and keep the bit going. But that is fun.
I like stuff like
but
that.
But they've asked for it. They initiated the prank.
That's true. There's actually one of those that plays out on an episode of The Simpsons where Bart calls Moe's and asks for first name Hugh, last name Jazz.
Oh, yeah.
Hugh Jazz is in the bar and he's like, he takes the phone and Bart's like, I'm going to be honest with you. This was a prank call that's gone horribly wrong for me.
And the guy's cool about it.
Not unexpected. Yeah, it's funny. It's a funny exchange. But, yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was interesting and, like, a really, like, intense thing that I came across in this, like, topic that I was like, this is so lighthearted and fun. So sorry to bring the mood down. But I don't know. I guess I felt like I wouldn't be doing us real lip service if I didn't talk about potentially the most tragic and wild prank call outcome of, like, just...
Yeah, for sure.
Unexpected tragedy. I don't know what else to say.
Because you can have that. We should be aware of that.
A good reminder, perhaps, to, you know, I don't know, tread lightly and not be ridiculous, but...
Maybe it's not a... Like, it's kind of risky to prank strangers. Like, I mean, you could prank someone who's, like, actually, like, a homicidal maniac, and then, like, that would not play out well for anyone.
That's true. Or you could try and prank call your friend and his dad would call you back pissed with the caller
or
ID
that.
Situation.
Yeah. Or you prank a former soldier with PTSD. It's not good.
You can't. No.
No. I would like to share one prank that I did at the end of high school that.
Good. I love a good prank. Let's go for it.
It hurt no one. It hurt no one. And it provided entertainment for many. So at my high school, like, it was on. Or the high school was off of, like, a big main road that ran through our little town. And there were baseball fields on the side of the road. So there were, like, big fences that the senior class would, like, take plastic Solo cups and put, like, their graduation year. They would write it in cups, like, really big in the metal fence.
Yes. I know of what you speak.
So... The year that I was going to graduate, my friend and I decided that we did not want to, we were not going to, like, write our class number or anything, but we did sneak up to the baseball field with a bunch of cups and we wrote VAG, V-A-G, like, just huge across the baseball fence right on the main road. And it was up there for, like, at least 2 weeks. No one took it down. My most favorite part was I went to work at the restaurant that I worked in, which was, like, one town over. And a girl that I worked with came in and she was like, has anyone seen that someone wrote VAG on Winton Road and that it's been up for a couple of weeks? And I just, like, lost it. And I was like, oh, my God. Dear coworker, I did that.
It was so funny because it was up for forever because I think no one
I don't think the people who would have taken it down really even understood what it was.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't know that anybody felt like it was their job or their responsibility to tend to that fence. And that's why it was just up there for forever, because everybody was like, that's not my job.
Right.
I don't take the vagina jokes off the fence. Really,
let's see if I can scour a picture of that. Scrounge up.
I remember people repeatedly bringing that up, being like, did you see the vag on the fence? I'm like, I know who did it.
It was memorable. I'd like to do that again, actually.
Yeah, what would be, like, your ideal prank situation? Or is there ever, like, a prank you'd, like, hypothesized about? Or, like, your ideal person to prank, perhaps?
Oh. I mean, I feel like my ideal person is honestly still my grandma. Like, when I just want, I don't know, like, I want to make it so that she opens her car door and, like, glitter just blasts out at her. I like to picture her going through her day with just, like, different pranks going off. Because she'd just be startled and then giggle and carry on.
I love that. I'll say, like, what I like the most in a prank is being pranked, like, myself, unexpectedly or by a person I don't expect. And in my nuclear family, of a time that the mood was really lightened, it won at least, my dad, bless him, like, is often a record on repeat. And I mean, this instance I'm going to tell you about is musically, but he also just, like, the man will, like, he'll have some banana pudding and think it was really good, and then he will eat banana pudding, like, for weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
He just gets
on one about things.
Yeah, yeah. He's on a train.
It's both his most annoying and endearing quality.
Yeah.
And my mom and I talk about this because my dad will really get on, like, one album or, like, two songs or, like, one song and just, like, won't stop playing it.
Oh, I remember that from when we were younger.
Oh, yeah. He'll just, like, have one jam that just can't be ended.
Just and tequila sunrise for weeks.
I mean, truly. And there is a period in time when he would not stop listening to Eric Clapton's Cocaine.
Oh my God.
Like, would not stop. To the point it was, like, ridiculous. And then it was the point that my mom and I were like, Glenn,
that's what,
like,
headphones are for, by the way.
Get your life together. It would be like, he'd have it playing downstairs and upstairs. And then it got to the point that he was, like, really enjoying this, that we'd be somewhere and he would, like, and this is rewind, you know, pre-iPhone for him, he would just, like, start playing it off of his Palm Pilot in his pocket.
Oh my God.
And, like, fucking just Palm, like, Pilot. Whenever it was, like, concert, and, like, because we had just really been like, oh my God, will you stop playing this song? And I remember I got into a point and I was, like, legitimately annoyed. Mm-hmm. And I walked, like, he had been doing something and I had been like, would you fucking turn off Eric Clapton? And then I went into the other room and my dad had gone downstairs, and then I came back into the room and it was playing again, and I wasn't looking at him, and I went, oh my God, would you? And I turned to look at him, and he had put a white ring around his nose in flour and sprinkled it down the front of him and was just like, what? And I just, the comedic timing of being, like, so annoyed, yep, and then, like,
it's
so
perfect,
can't stop laughing. And my dad is, like, very good for, like, the long game of a joke and then, like, the pinnacle moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say my mom is less known for that and less known to, like, get ya. Like,
yeah,
that's not her style. She's just a kind sweetheart. She's probably the one who gets had, maybe, in our nuclear family.
Yeah, and then she
the
just
most.
Takes us to Dairy Queen. Yeah.
Yeah, and then buys everyone Dairy Queen. Bless her. But there's this time I'm in Walgreens with my mom. I'm in my school uniform. I'm in high school. And my mom and I are just, like, we just, like, really love the Halloween aisle. It's mm-hmm. just, like, truly something about it, you know? But my mom is, like, in the Halloween aisle, and she just starts setting everything off, and then she, like, kind of runs down the aisle and, like, away from it, like it wasn't her who set everything off.
Mm-hmm.
And I, and, like, a true retail savage that I've been my whole life, I went, Wendy, you can't run in this Walgreens. They're
gonna, oh my God,
shoplifting.
Oh my God.
And so my mom just, like, walks, like, marches, like, along. I'm following her to the front of the store. And then she just goes right by the registers and all these people, just goes, well, Austin, since they don't have any medication for that horrible rash you have, I guess we can leave now. And then she just walks out without me.
That's amazing. And you're right. And she doesn't usually do stuff like that, which makes it so much more gold.
Well, I was stunned, and she just left me there, and I was like, I was so shocked. I remember being like, almost like winded. Like, wait, what just happened? I was like, like, it was like, what is going on?
My breath away.
I walked out. She's standing by her car in the parking lot, double over laughing. And the first thing she says is, you expect that kind of shit from your dad, but not from me, right? Oh, blessed. And I love it. I was publicly shamed and it was hilarious.
Absolutely. That's so cute.
No medication for that horrible rash.
Guess no medication. I thought of one other brief one that happened recently, and this is...
Oh, give me another prank. We need some levity in life right now, so most definitely.
And it is fun to prank, I think, people who are either, like, your parents, grandparents, older relatives, or, like, your superiors.
Yes, it feels bad to prank down. There's something about power dynamics there. Yeah. Maybe that's it. The power and control of, like, kind of getting one over on the adults as a kid. That's why hazing feels
bad. Because the power dynamic is the other way. It's, like, more experienced people hazing newer people. Anyway...
There is something that feels different about that. I like that comparison. I like that you made it.
Thank you. At work, we convinced... So, okay, I work at a restaurant, and there are these little, like, finger sleeves that you can, like, put over your fingers, like, instead of gloves, if you can't, like, put a whole... You can't put a whole glove on it if you have a Band-Aid. They're not actually called finger condoms, but that's like the colloquial name. Yes. We were talking about them and my boss like didn't realize that there was like any other name for them. And so we were just like, yeah, like for sure. Like those are finger condoms. And she made a label and labeled the box of them finger condoms. And it's just like now sitting in the drawer with like all the bandages and stuff. And I love it so much.
I love that. I just like, I like a goofy, dumb thing like that. We had that at a store that I worked at that we had a P-Touch, like the label maker. And in all these random places in like back stock and in like the office, and you had to know where they were, that they were hidden. It would just be like places that it said like nipple and that had just been printed on the label maker.
God,
just like
so
on
funny.
The underside of like a specific doorknob and like just different places. And people would be like, oh yeah, well, have you seen like the, you know, whatever nipple and what? And people would be like, what? But if you worked there long enough, you knew where all the funny ones were.
Mm-hmm. That's so good. I want to do that at my work. I can't get caught.
I like an Easter egg prank like that. Yes. That's a good one.
Yes. Mm-hmm. My dad likes to put different middle names on his like ordering slips when he orders packages. Like if he buys something from eBay, when he fills out his name for the shipping label, like he'll put Scott Labia Ryan, shit like that.
I remember when your dad has done labia. I have actually seen him get mail that says labia is the middle name. I forgot about that. Oh, that's a real...
That doesn't hurt anyone.
No, it's just fun.
Oh, my God.
Ugh. Okay, well, in true Why Are You Like This fashion, we have to wrap in a verbal game.
Wrap it up.
Listen, cue the vibraphone.
Cue it.
So, I'd just like to give you like a marry, fuck, kill kind of sorts. A three choices with rules kind of game, right?
I feel like we haven't done that in a little bit.
Yeah, it feels fun. You are going to be pranked.
Okay.
One of these people will never prank you.
Oh, okay.
One of these people will one time in your life pull an elaborate prank over you.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of these people will prank you every day, just once a day at random.
Oh my God. Okay. Just like a fly, just repeated. Oh. Never goes away. Okay, who are they?
Kate McKinnon.
Oh.
John Candy. Rob Thomas.
Oh my God.
Your true love, Rob Thomas, I listen.
What are the flavor of his pranks? I can't even.
Right. I had to have the rogue non-comedian.
Yeah, that is a rogue one. And I have to wonder about him though, because I don't like. His aunt dated serial killer Pee Wee Gaskins, and so there could be brush there. And I don't know if he's got weird ideas. I don't know enough about Rob Thomas.
But also, like, perhaps like the unsuspecting prankster, like the person you don't assume is the prankster, is the funniest one of all, like my mom with the rash.
That could be. That could be. I think I worry. So I have to prioritize kind of like managing my long-term irritation level. And I think then I have to go with like the pranking everyday choice pick first. And okay. I think that I would pick Kate McKinnon because I feel like the flavor of her pranks would like probably keep me laughing always. And also maybe because she is like a comedian for millennials and like a newer person, a post 9/11 comedian, if you will.
I will. Look, we got, we're getting very post 9/11 or pre 9/11 on this. I didn't know how relevant that would be, but here we all are.
I feel like her pranks would be kinder, or maybe like she would have a sensitivity to not pushing me too far. So I could take that on the daily and I would enjoy her popping up once a day. It's fun.
I could take that.
I would one time like for John Candy to create an elaborate prank for me. It could last days. I would just absolutely love that.
Days.
But as a pre 9/11 comedian and I don't just like a
pre 9/11. I love that we're classifying comedians this way now. Keep going.
And like an older male, I feel like he might not understand. Like he might do something by accident that makes me really upset. And so if I have him every day, the chances of that happening really increase. But I kind of trust him to do like a one-off absurd thing. And I could take a lot in like a single prank. But repeated every day, John Candy, I get concerned that he may get out of hand. And that means I have to kill Rob Thomas. And this is, I have killed Rob Thomas so many times now.
The killing was not involved. They were just never going to prank you. You always do this to Rob.
Sorry, Rob.
I just said one of these people will never play a prank on you.
And that person is Rob Thomas because he'll be, dead.
I can't. Oh my God.
I'm sorry.
Is there a person in your life, like that you actually know, that if they were to, play a prank on you every day, it would bring you like a great amount of joy?
Ellen Bentley.
Oh, that's so good. Just to listen, as two people who really reflected upon our joyful prank times of younger years, shout out to Ellen if you're listening.
We love you.
We do love you. That's real. Oh my God. That was not the answer I thought. I loved it.
But for people who maybe don't know who that is,
Ellen's just somebody we went to school with.
Someone we went to school with who just always has a special place in our hearts. I'd love for her to pop up on the daily doing crazy shit to me. Not shitting in it. Please, Ellen, don't shit in a box. But
nobody shit in a box. Oh God.
Draw the line at bodily fluids.
Oh, listen, if you too would like to draw the line at bodily fluids, you can always do so. And you can get at us at what fluids those are on the internet via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, and on Twitter at WAYLT tweets. And if you too are like me and wish that just your own mother pranked you every day, you'd be thriving.
You would.
Bye.
Bye.